Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, I'm joined on the line by Peter Burke, TD, Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. Good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Claire.
We heard there in the news the Taoiseach Micheál Martin describing as shocking the level to which the Irish travelling public are being ignored by both sides in this Aer Lingus dispute, which seems more and more intractable now. And people just want to know when it will be resolved. Can you offer any clarity this morning?
Well, I absolutely think and know that air connectivity is the heartbeat of a small open island economy like our own. It's so important for our SMEs. It's so important for the whole tourism sector, who really depend on this point in time to garner the majority of their income. And as well, as there's thousands of families now depending on certainty for their travel plans in the days and weeks ahead. So I really call as strong as I can for both parties to get around the table. We need de-escalation here. I'm always of the view that every single industrial relations dispute is resolved one way or another. And the key thing and the key mechanism to do that is for both parties to get around the table, work out their difference in a very safe space, because that's what the WRC provides. It's a very safe space for both sides to work out their differences.
Yeah, but you can do more than just ask them, can't you? Because you have a mechanism at your disposal where you can force them into discussions.
Well, that comes with significant risk, Claire. If you look back at 2002, when a mechanism such as that was invoked, you had the National Implementation Body, one which was part of the Social Partnership, which has since been disbanded. And secondly, you had Aer Lingus, which was a company fully in state ownership. Now, at the moment, what the power is that you can call them into the room, but you have to have a clear pathway for an agreement to do that. And if I did that, I'd be doing two things. Firstly, I'd be undermining the infrastructure, the Labour Court and the WRC, because they know at their point in time when the judgment is. And secondly, I can't undermine their capacity to make that judgment, because they're in the room, they're having discussions with both parties, and they have to make that assessment independently when to call in. And the critical point in time is that we have a Labour Court recommendation on the table. It didn't secure a resolution to this issue. So we need to be very careful at that point in time. You have to see the end result. You have to be within touching distance of the result. If you did that without having a clear pathway to a solution, you could make things much worse for everyone.
You started by saying how serious this is, the impact that it is having, not just on families, but also on Ireland Inc., a point that was made on this programme by Padraig O'Cadha, the founder of Air Aran, saying it's going to put people off possibly into next year when it comes to booking holidays to Ireland. So surely, given all of that, you having this mechanism at your disposal, now is the time to use it.
It is very serious. The stakes are very high. It's very high for a country and for the travelling public who need certainty, and for the future of the business model of Aer Lingus. It's important that certainty flows through all avenues of the business model. So what I'm asking is that immediately the parties get around the table, try and get your heads together in a cool, safe space that the WRC provides, and try and get this resolved quickly, because the last thing any of us wants is this disruption. But no government, by intervening, that could make things worse, Claire. You have to be
very careful
on this.
Minister, there's no sign of a cool head around the place at all on either side of this. I'm sure you would agree, given what we've heard over the last number of days. But where? And you've heard both sides ramping it up in public, and there's no sign that they're willing to sit down.
Well, the industrial relations machinery provides the cool space, the safe space for them to sit down and resolve this issue. And the critical thing here, Claire, is both Aer Lingus, Forsa, IALPA have a clear track record of dealing with institutions of the state. They've done this before, they've been here before, and they've got resolutions before. So they know that's a tried and tested model. So when all the discourse is over in the airwaves now, we need to sit down around the table. That's the critical point, to try and work out a solution, because I absolutely know that the unions or the Aer Lingus want this to continue. They don't, because it's important that they get certainty. It's bad for everyone, a dispute of this nature, and it has huge implications for our economy, for our SME sector. So I'm really appealing for them to sit down around the table, resolve it. We're providing the safe space to do so. We're providing all the infrastructure and mechanisms of the state to resolve this issue.
People might have noticed this morning as well in those comments that Micheál Martin made earlier. He said there was an obligation on Aer Lingus to make an effort to create momentum around talks. So does the government feel that the company needs to take the lead here, not the union?
There's an obligation on both, because remember, we have an interim resolution by the Labour Court of a 9.25% already on the table as an interim measure. That can provide a pathway to sit down again and work out a clear resolution to this issue. And it's as simple as this, Claire. People just need to sit down around the table and work out their differences. And we provide independent mechanisms to do that. It's a very, you know, strong position to be in as a country, that we're providing a non-judgmental space for the company and indeed workers to get around the table and to try and resolve it. And that's the only mechanism that can work and be successful.
It's just, I suppose it's hard to see how that's going to happen in the short term, because it seems to be escalating. It's particularly confrontational. Now we have this issue of short notice pilot sickness, which has arisen and seems to be on the table now too. Do you get my point that we're not moving closer to talks? We seem to be moving further away.
Look, there's always an element of noise on each side of the equation when you have industrial relations disputes. There's nothing new in that. But as I said at the outset, it is always a case where we do get a resolution. We just want that resolution to happen quickly, because of the stakes are so high for a country, they're so high for the travelling public, they're so high for SME sector, and ultimately for Aer Lingus, because I'm sure the pilots and everyone around the table and Aer Lingus want a successful business model that we as a country can take pride on and provides huge connectivity right across the globe. We want that to continue. We don't want to jeopardise, and we want to get people around the table immediately to ultimately provide a successful resolution.
Not least the people who are waiting to go on their holiday, much long for holiday, or the wedding that they might have planned and saved up for, and people are tearing their hair out the longer this continues. Listen, I want to move on now, because you've been talking about the VAT rate for the hospitality sector. You want to see it brought back down to 9% from 13.5%. Now, the Minister for Finance has previously said he's against this. He might be open now to discussing it before the budget. But do you see a bit of a gap here? Because it looks like Michael McGrath might be off to Brussels, so you could get it in under the wire when all the shenanigans, you know, who's going into that portfolio and so on, while that's playing out.
No, look, what I'm doing is, as Enterprise Minister, I'm advocating for many of the businesses up and down our country. I've met with the Hospitality and Tourism Forum, which was a mechanism established during the COVID period, and all the different sectoral representatives sit around that table, many business leaders, and unanimously everyone is calling for the 9% VAT rate. Now, I'm very clear, and I was in the interview that you referenced, that there are many competing interests in government. We all have to work these things out. Every minister will not get what they want. My job is to advocate from a position of business to work and put a very strong business package together, because one thing I'm very clearly focused on the coming budget, I want the element of businesses, a budget that we can be proud of, that has business models and incentives wrapped right across it, to ensure that we can keep the 2.7 million people employed, which we never take for granted, and we can keep enterprises growing and getting stronger on a sustainable path, which is very important.
Where are you going to find the almost 800 million a year that the VAT rate brings in at 13.5%?
Well, it's not 800 million, depending on which model you use, Claire. Obviously, it would be significantly
less. Well, Michael McGrath costed it at 764 million a year.
Yeah,
and
that's,
I think,
for everything.
He probably know.
Absolutely. And I'm a chartered accountant myself. I know as well how to work out figures and how the budgetary process works. I'm very attuned to it and have a lot of experience in it. So what I'm doing is I'm putting a number of models on the table. We obviously have to work that out with our partners in finance, and a number of other ideas I have. I want to get my pre-budget submission done very early, because I'm very much aware that when you have new ideas, your new minister like me, they have to be stress tested right across government. And my job is to get them to Merrion Street as early as we can.
So are you saying
to try and ensure we have a very strong package
for business. So would you be able to find that shortfall? Is that what you're saying?
We have to see what the summer economic statement sets out. So anything I do would never jeopardise the country. I think we have to be very careful that we are always on a sustainable model. So the summer economic statement will set out the parameters for the budget. Obviously, there are competing interests. If we go with a VAT rate reduction, that has knock-on consequences. But I'm being very honest about that. And in the article, I was very clear that, you know, we have a collective approach to this. Every minister faces many competing interests, not alone throughout government, but within their own department. And I have to make a judgment call on the ideas that I bring forward, and that's what I'm doing. I think when I sat down, the very first thing the Taoiseach said to me was, listen to business, work with them, ensure that we are rewarding enterprise and we're keeping it on a very sustainable footing. And that's my job, and that's what I will advocate to. So I think there's no surprise in the Enterprise Minister calling for business measures to support them into the future.
Yeah, but I suppose the question I'm asking you is how do you pay for it? How do you make up the shortfall? And you haven't explained how you would do that.
Well, Well, hold on, Claire. It depends that you quoted figures of €800 million. If you choose just to exclude aspects of it, like accommodation, it's closer to €500 million. Now, if you look at the last number of envelopes, we've had anything from €2.5 to €1.5 billion of a tax package within the budget. So you have to make choices within that tax package. I'm saying to the public very clearly, if you bring in VAT or an element of a VAT reduction, obviously that's going to have implications on other areas. I mean, very open and honest about that. Mm-hmm. It means that you do less of other things, or if you don't do the VAT, you do more of other things.
Okay.
It's a very simple equation. This isn't complicated for anyone listening, I don't think.
Listen, I mentioned the EU commissioner job, and it looks as though we're going to be getting our nomination in good and early this week now. Does that mean that we are aiming high for one of those very sought after portfolios? And which one do you think we should aim for?
Well, I think we should aim very high as a country. We can be very proud of our track record in Europe. I know, as a former Minister for European Affairs, that these negotiations are so important that you need to be in the field early. You need to present the best opportunity to get the best portfolio for our country, because it does matter to have a very significant portfolio.
Which one do you think?
Well, look, I'm not going to name portfolios, Claire, because obviously, ultimately, it's not my call. And secondly, I can't be sure as to what portfolio we would get. But I do think the earlier in the field and the quality of candidate do give you the best chance of securing the best portfolio. And I think your listeners will appreciate that. It's a very, very difficult process. It does go on a long time. But the results of the European Parliament elections probably have accelerated a little bit and given a little bit more certainty. So we do need to have the Taoiseach going out to the European Council meeting with that nominee and to ensure that that person, whoever he or she is in the field early.
Ah, sure. It's Michael McGrath. I mean, we're all fairly clear on that now, aren't we? And that would mean
got the call yet, Claire.
You haven't got the call.
That it is Michael McGrath,
right.
Not myself, should I say.
Okay. Listen, but if it is Michael McGrath, we would expect to get something finance related, right? Rather than an environment or agriculture.
Well, you will be hoping for a very significant portfolio, obviously, but you can never tell, Claire. These negotiations are very difficult, they're protracted. There's a lot of other countries in the room who have other ideas, and we just need to have someone in the field with strong credentials, good credibility, that they can put the best possible chance forward. And we have a very strong team. We have a very strong diplomatic presence in Brussels through our permanent representatives. Okay. We always really outweigh our size in terms of our diplomatic muscle. And that's very important to us as a country.
So, Minister, you're launching this decarbonisation fund today. This is for the manufacturing sector's biggest emitters. But I was surprised to see it's only 300 million. It seems like quite a small fund to address such a big problem.
Yes, this is it's under our current capital ceilings, like you were talking about earlier in the interview. It's very important that we have costed items. This is what we can give at this point in time. It may increase in the future, but it is a starting framework to accelerate the change up to 2030. So there are many businesses, be it in the food and beverage sector, pharma, chemical industry, where they can change their process, their manufacturing process, to make them more carbon neutral. And if you look at, for example, Diageo, a company that's 264 years old, one of the most iconic brands, as we know, in our country, they have produced a pathway that will reduce their carbon emissions by 90%. So it's trying to get other businesses into that basket where government can come and provide priming finance to our agencies to assist them.
But look at cement producers, some of the biggest emitters in the sector. Like, this is unlikely to have a big impact on them because they can't change what they do. It's extremely carbon intensive.
It is.
Do you concede?
We've provided a pathway already for our cement sector for lower carbon cement, which we'll be working through. And that's why it's important to have a strong research and innovation sector that we can work on to improve our practices. But the roadmap for cement will improve significantly our emissions. And that will be essentially the guide rails through public procurement as well, because government has in its armory other tools that it can use to change policy in these areas. And that's what we're trying to do. We're giving a strong lead in time for those in the cement sector to change their processes, to use more decarbonized manufacturing process in providing cement. And all that will be worked through in partnership with the sectors. This isn't anyone trying to flick a switch and change it overnight. You have to work in partnership through the IDA, our LEOs for smaller businesses and Enterprise Ireland, SEAI. All those state actors will be working in the framework, trying to make all our industry more sustainable and better for consumers and better for the environment into the future.
We're battling, though, with being behind the curve. Like, we've biofuels now, and we've been told that they'll be one of the main ways that heat-intensive producers in industry in this country can decarbonize. But we're way behind. We need 120,000 hectares of grassland. This is according to Chagas, specifically to supply these large-scale anaerobic digesters, 200 of them by the year 2030, and they don't have planning permission even yet.
We do, and that's why we've brought out a new strategy to tackle that. That's why we're bringing in a new planning and development bill, which will accelerate the process whereby big infrastructural projects can get through. That's why we're reforming the EPA licensing system, again, trying to ensure that applicants aren't waiting years on end to get a decision for very important utilities and very important environmental green lights that they need. So government is working right across on all those key areas. And in many cases, Claire, this can be as simply as, you know, right-sizing your energy use or reducing your wastewater in your process. All those issues can be worked using a bit of innovation, using money like we're providing with your own. And ultimately, coming down the line, we have so much ESG regulations and reporting requirements. We have consumers demanding more sustainable products. So we have to provide new jobs and going sustainably about this change, and government working in partnership with all the actors.
Minister, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Peter Burke, back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.